we're back from the quantum realm and here to save the world once again. Welcome to another episode of Mike, Mike, and Oscar. I'm your co-host, Mike One. This is my co-host, also Mike.
I'm also Mike, and to start off with a dad joke, I'm going to quote my father. When I told him I was going to see the sequel for Ant-Man, he goes, "What, Uncle Man?" Oh, that's a true story.
No.
The apple didn't even fall from the tree.
All right, so thanks for listening.
Now all of you know.
That's all the review you need about now. We are doing a movie event pod, Ant-Man and the Wasp, just released. We're recording this July 6th, and God willing, you are hearing it on the same day. Just fresh off one of the first showings of Ant-Man and the Wasp for a wide release last night, July 5th.
Movie buddies.
Yeah, we saw this one hand in hand like we always do, sharing a single thing of popcorn, and we're talking another Marvel movie. This is the first Marvel movie since all our favorite heroes encountered Thanos in Infinity War. This is the fallout, and I'm not spoiling anything by saying in Infinity War, and it's addressed in the first scene of this movie, Scott Lang was nowhere to be found.
They basically shot him just saying something off screen, and they're like, "Oh, hey, Scott, see you later."
Oh, look, is that Scott Lang? Don't turn the camera.
Wait, was that Paul Rudd? I mean, Scott Lang?
Is he in a cab? Is Hawkeye driving?
Yeah, there's some very just an aside, an anecdote, like, "Oh, well, Ant-Man's not here because he got in the cab."
Yeah. So he's wasn't in Infinity War, and this movie picks up right from that point and explains very early on why he wasn't in Infinity War, what he's been doing, and the lead up there too.
Right. We're not going to spoil Infinity War until the very, very end of this entire show when we do a double spoiler section.
Right. So like all our movie event pods, you're going to have a non-spoiler section, a spoiler section.
For Ant-Man.
We'll be able to delineate the two. And then after the spoiler section, we think we're going to have another spoiler section.
Maybe we'll make up our own spoiler song for that.
We'll beatbox like, there
yeah,
you go.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
yeah, Homestar Runner did back
you
in the day.
You have that to look forward to. Cut out after the song.
So to start, let's start the non-spoiler section, Ant-Man and the Wasp. Should you see this movie? What's in it? What can you expect? What are the lead-ups? What's the production profile? Also, Mike's going to start us off.
Story inception stuff. Obviously, Ant-Man was the 12th film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Surprise hit.
Yeah. 519 worldwide off
not
of bad. 130.
That's not couch change.
Yeah, $130 million budget, so it made good money there. Sequel was warranted. It was announced in October 2015. The director, Peyton Reed, from the first one, comes back. He was kind of the relief pitcher for Edgar Wright after pre-production last time. This time he gets to take it from start to finish. Written by Chris McKenna and Eric Summers. McKenna's from Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle. They also teamed up and wrote Spider-Man Homecoming. So that raised our expectations a bit when we read this before the movie last night.
Yeah, and how could it not? Spider-Man Homecoming, one of our favorite Marvel movies. We reviewed, if you're not familiar with the Marvel properties for some reason, we reviewed the entire MCU, the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe, all 20 films now, going back from Iron Man through Infinity War. We have a six-part MCU review. Go check that out if you want to go see some stuff we did. We did a re-rank at the end of those, and we're doing another Marvel one today.
Reviewed Avengers Infinity War, of course. Yeah. So this is like number 9, number 11. It's our 11th Marvel Cinematic Universe pod. If you count Deadpool, that's 12. I mean, look at all the stuff we've done. We're just like so awesome.
We're just waxing, but we're just...
My God.
This is just forced masturbation of ourselves.
So proud of us. Paul Rudd returns.
Oh, we're the best!
This guy named Paul Rudd, he returns as Ant-Man. He's from the 40-year-old virgin. This is
jacked,
40.
By the way.
Jacked.
Jacked, Paul
ripped.
Rudd.
Unless that was CGI.
They did do it to Michael Douglas. It
I want
funny
that CGI.
Michael Douglas's face was on Paul Rudd's abs in this.
They put his abs on Michael Douglas' neck, actually.
Fair.
Anyway, more on that later. Paul Rudd, 40-year-old virgin. This is 40. This is the end. I love you, man. Dinner for Schmucks. Role Models. Wet Hot American Summer. Movie end shows. Evangeline Lilly returns as Hope Van Dyne / The Wasp. She's from Lost, Hobbit movies, Smallville, The Hurt Locker. Michael Douglas is back as Hank Pym. He is someone we're not super happy with these days because of last year's news, but he is a cancer survivor. He does do an okay job, better than the first one. We'll talk about him. Michael Pena is also back as Luis. He's from Observe and Report, Crash, American Hustle, Shooter, Narcos, Eastbound and Down, and End of Watch. A guy that has a great versatility as an actor. He can play goofy comedian, and he plays it as good as anybody, and then he plays like serious cop in movies.
And pulls both off with very, very, what looks like ease.
Walton Goggins from Django Unchained, The Hateful Eight, and The Shield.
Still have not forgiven him for The Shield, but go on.
He is Sonny Birch. Bobby Cannavale and Judy Greer play Paul Rudd's daughter's parents.
I don't know how much I have to say about them or how much you do, so I'm going to say this now. We loved Cannavale in the first one. Yeah. He's a parody of himself in this one.
Yeah, he's comic relief. Yeah. He's not in this very often, but he's the stepdad. Judy Greer from adaptation Jurassic World 27 Dresses, upcoming Halloween movie trailer.
Hell yes!
That we reviewed a couple weeks ago.
Devil in the Advocate episode. It's only 15 minutes if you don't have a lot of time. It's a nice quick one. And you get to hear me yell at Mike.
Yeah. That usually happens off screen, but it doesn't bother me. Anyway, T.I. is back as Dave.
Who is, like, the best actor in this movie. It makes no
sense.
Whatever
you say, Mike. No, he's good. He's very good. He's got good comic timing in this
one. Great. I don't know where it came from, but good for him.
The villain of the movie is played by Hannah John Kamen. She is Ava / Ghost. John Kamen was in Ready Player One, Black Mirror, and Game of Thrones. She does a really nice job in this. Yeah. Randall Park, he's the politician from Veep who always talks about his military service.
Yes.
His heroism.
Very funny.
He's really funny in that. And he's pretty darn funny in this as the FBI agent. T.I. and Michael Pena's buddy is David Dastmalchian in
good
this
job.
One. Plays a Russian guy. Pretty funny. Divyan Ladwa also stars, and we add Morpheus himself, Lawrence Fishburne, and Catwoman herself, Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah, though I would have appreciated Fishburne to just be the Morpheus character.
Be Morpheus, offering people two pills.
Right, throughout the entirety. But we can't always get what we want, you know?
Catwoman 2.
Yeah.
Then Disney will really have bought
all
everything.
The properties.
Few production notes. Filming went from August to November 2017 at Pinewood Atlanta Studios in Fayetteville County, Georgia.
Georgia getting a lot of movies and TV shows shot down
Marvel
there.
Central, yeah. Baby. Metro Atlanta, San Francisco, Savannah, Georgia, and Hawaii were also sets or locations, I guess I should say. Just a few sets. Just maybe a house here, a house there. No. A few of the director's comments, Peyton Reed's comments, were interesting throughout the pre-production and promotional tours here. He wanted to explore a complicated hero in the Wasp. He said it was about damn time in regards to there being a female hero leading one of these MCU movies.
Yeah, Scarlett Johansson's Black Widow side somewhere. In the distance.
Very true. Very true. I'm going to have some things to say. We love the fact that the Wasp kicks ass from start to finish in this movie.
Yeah, very capable, very bona fide butt kicker. But
I think her character had many more dimensions in the first film. Anyway, he also said that he wanted a true partnership, both romantic and heroic, between Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Kind of like us.
Her name is not Hank Pym. That's her father's name. Her name is Hope Van Dyne.
Yes,
my goddamn brain. Reed also wanted to inject a bunch of flashbacks about Hank Pym. All right, that's where my brain was going. He wanted to dive deeper into the Michael Douglas character, feature him quite a bit more, and I think they did that. There's a lot of rich backstory in the comics for that character, I guess, because he was like the main character.
They did. Yeah, he was the first Ant-Man. Yeah, I know that much in the comics, but they did give certainly enough of a backstory for him and for his wife in this one.
Absolutely. So, those are my production profile notes, Mike.
Right, let's do some specs. Ant-Man and the Wasp, directed by Peyton Reed. Six people get screenplay credits for this one. Chris McKenna from Lego Batman, Spider-Man Homecoming, like also Mike told you. Eric Summers, who I think is McKenna's writing partner. Paul Rudd also gets a story credit on this, or a screenplay credit on this one, as he did the first one.
He ad-libbed a couple jokes.
Andrew Barrer.
And then did sit-ups.
Andrew Barrer, who apparently was uncredited but did work on the first script for Ant-Man, gets a story a screenplay credit on this one. It's his first feature film credit since 2014's Haunt. And Gabriel Ferrari, who seems like Barr's writing partner, same deal, worked on the first script,
all right,
gets
cool.
credited for this one. Debut.
I want a writing partner.
Debuted June 26th, 2018 at the El Capitan Theater in Los Angeles. Went wide technically today, but July 6th, which you're hopefully hearing this, but went wide, obviously, the previews last night. Raked in $11 million on its Thursday showings alone, which is outpacing Doctor Strange, so it's off to a decent start there. 118-minute runtime on the PG-13 rating. It was produced, obviously, by Marvel, distributed, obviously, by the Mouse in Florida. Reported budget of $130 million, which is, I think, the same budget as Ant-Man 1 that you just said, so it's made for similar money. Hopefully, they're hoping that it rakes in the same amount of money.
Overseas, this is going to do better.
I would probably, with all the visual effects that this one relies on. It's no small amount, $130 million, but when compared with Marvel's, and the last Marvel movie were off of Infinity True. War, where the budget was $300 million. It's a bit of a step down.
But it made $2 billion.
It did. It's a Marvel movie, so it's going well early on. Early reviews having sitting. Now, when I first checked IMDb last night, it was an 8.0.
Right.
And then I refreshed the screen, and it was a 7.9. And then I came back to it this morning.
Yeah.
And it's a 7.8. Okay. So it's slowly taking a step down as more people get to it. We'll see if that evens out where it lands.
I wonder if that's pretty consistent for movies that get a lot of critical praise. You know, we don't usually check that, honestly.
Right.
We don't usually check the audience. Right. Yeah, so maybe it gets hyped by the critics, and then it comes down naturally.
Right. It's unfair to bring it up because it's fresh. You know, so many people are just getting to it, so who knows. But I was on 8,000-plus reviews. Obviously, it's a Marvel property. It's going to get way more as time goes on. It isn't certified fresh. Speaking of fresh, Rotten Tomato score of 87%.
Wow.
163 critic scores last check, and 142 of those are positive.
That's a lot of positive reviews.
Sure is. It's got a 69, nice, Metascore from Metacritic.
You couldn't help yourself.
No, never. 5 points higher than its predecessor of Ant-Man 1, and it's actually a point higher than Infinity War got, which surprised me to see.
Yeah, that's surprising. That's
so
ridiculous.
I agree.
But those, what are you thinking, people?
Those are the specs for Ant-Man and the Wasp. Not a lot out there because, like we said, this is a brand fresh new property that we're trying to get to a little early for you guys. Let you know whether or not you should see it. But let's.
No, I get it. I mean, Avengers is super duper heavy, and this was just kind of a fun like episode in a way. Of a TV
Which
show.
Gets lost on some critics from some stuff I've read, but we'll get into it. What do we want to talk about first?
Expectations here? And kind of tease our review, I guess. I was very excited to see this after I learned Spider-Man Homecoming writing team was on board. I learned that kind of day of. Really didn't follow this, even though we did an MCU review. I didn't follow this that closely.
We have a lot of movies to watch.
I was pumped to see them feature the Wasp and Evangeline Lilly. I thought that was really cool. Peyton Reed said a lot of the right things throughout the promotional tours. Again, you know, preparing this episode, I think I got a little too hyped, and I remembered the feeling I had coming off Avengers Infinity War, so I had very high expectations. How about you?
Yeah, but see, I think that's the problem. I think a lot of people feel like you did. The last thing they have in their mind about Marvel is Infinity War.
Right.
And that unbelievable grand picture, that movie epic, that's like a once-in-a-lifetime type feel, and they see Marvel again, and they think that's... I think you kind of get lost, not you personally, obviously, but I think anyone with that mindset would kind of missed the point of seeing a movie like this because this is the comic relief of the MCU.
But this is like a small movie. This is a chase movie, race against time thing. You know, almost like a dueling spy movie in a way.
Right, yeah.
Ghost and Ant-Man, which is very cool, and which you see a lot of the, you know, great stuff in the trailers. So that's kind of the tease of my review. I wish we had more money shots. That's the wrong word, but more things that I didn't see in the trailer kind of really make me happy in this movie. But there's a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, I my expectations, I was high on it. I wasn't crazy about the first Ant-Man movie. I thought it was more like the kid version of the Marvel to sell toys.
Right.
I was excited about Evangeline Lilly in this one, that she had more of a role because I thought she was the most interesting character in the first one. I was excited about the Ghost bad guy, because that's not a character I was familiar with at all. I had high expectations, because how can you not with a Marvel movie? I think the gist of our reviews, we talked about this a little, I think we're going to talk negatively, because there's a lot of negatives to point out in this, but we both were pleased.
It's very weird, because we had fun.
Right.
We laughed. We didn't cry, but we said, wow.
Cried when the Pizza Hut pizzas weren't there.
The Pizza Hut pieces were not there. Yeah. I wonder if that had something to do with it. Now, this is to just understand this and to kind of segue into our theater-going experience. We ate beforehand. We went to the teriyaki chicken place, ate a full meal.
Yeah.
With, like, add-ons. Yeah. You had your thing. You had shrimp. Yeah. I had sushi. Like, we are not small people.
When we say we're large.
And then we walked upstairs and we're, like, just throwing daggers at the guy who grabbed the last pizza and was holding it in line.
And I think the fact that we're obsessing about the food that we ate before and after the movie is kind of an indicator of what we thought about this movie.
Yeah, I mean, we had a really good setup, though. We had leather seats, reclining, 3D, It was a beautiful setup. So we had a rear right at eye level. We barely had to move our heads.
Yeah. The theater was not packed.
It was awesome. We are spoiled American jerks.
Yes. Yes.
Because it was a beautiful theater going experience.
It was. And we still had so many negatives to say about that. I am personally very conflicted with this review. Because yes. I know it's a fun enough movie.
Well, here's the thing.
That we're going to get your money out of.
We're going to be very high on it in the production values, I think. So we'll actually start out high and then we'll get a little
lower. I think a lot
story.
Of the quote-unquote highlights are going to be us nitpicking it.
True. And I think as a popcorn movie, it works. Yeah. And then as an Oscar movie, we have issues. So we're Oscar critics. I mean, we're sticking to our guns here, my friend.
Good.
We're calling them like we see them.
I like it. Thank you for talking me through that.
Good. So production value, sight to sound, I would say, because the visual effects
are awesome.
Leaving this theater, you said to me, Mike, I think these are the best yet in the MCU.
I did.
You might be right.
I say that, to be fair, after every Marvel movie. Because I'm a prisoner of the moment. But, the visual effects in this are great. They're outstanding.
Awesome.
The big to small, that technology that was introduced in the first one, that's used intricately to the plot in this one.
Yes.
It has a big purpose a lot of times. And the way it's pulled off to the eye, it's stunning, really.
The giant man, he just fits seamlessly in that ocean with that boat. You all seen the trailer. He fits seamlessly in the city. He's got different levels of how big he gets.
It's crazy.
Even the one scene where he gets super huge in the closet at the school, and he doesn't even get that huge, but he gets as big as a room.
Right.
And then she's still normal.
Right.
It was like Lord of the Rings level trick shot or something.
Would love to hear director's commentary when this comes out about how they pulled all this off. And I also can't remember, to go with the visual effects thing, yes, we've had villains in the MCU that rely on visual effects, but the visual effects of Ghost, they make up her constitution. Her character relies on those.
How do they stage those fight scenes? They're fighting, and then unreal. She punches through her, and it's so seamless. You never lose track of these fights either. Whatever they did with the choreography is phenomenal, because they're very simple, and you got complicated stuff happening.
Yeah, you have
the ghosting and the shrinking, and
you have a punch thrown by Evangeline Lilly in the back of a car. You've seen this in the trailer too, which is part of also Mike's gripe. You see a lot of the big stuff in the trailers, but Evangeline Lilly throws a punch. The guy's going to respond by hitting her with a gun. She gets small. The guy hits his buddy with the gun. She gets big. She throws another punch at the guy with the gun. And it all happens bang, bang, bang. And you're right. You don't lose track or sight or anything of it. But it looks like it's actually happening, which for those kinds of effects is really a big deal.
It's very easy to follow. There's a lot of wide shots, which is a tribute to the talent on display. That's something that smaller budget movies won't have. I just watched an indie kind of sci-fi action movie the other day.
Right.
I'll talk about later in another episode. And they just had close-ups on the guy's nose for half the movie because they couldn't afford during the action. This is just, we're going to show you everything. Here's how freaking talented, and here's how much money we have for you.
So I think if you're that kind of viewer, if you gush over visual effects, you got to check this one out. It's stunning. It's really stunning to see.
We didn't even talk about the de-aging stuff. I mean, Michael Douglas, we had some qualms, but yeah. Michelle Pfeiffer, it worked. Lawrence Fishburne. Whew, I thought that looked awesome. We didn't talk about the quantum realm, how cool that looked. That was kind of, here's the thing, Avengers Infinity War was a bit, I would say they took comic book visuals or cartoonish visuals and made them just real enough. The quantum realm was one of those things. We all know it's silly nonsense land.
That's a good comparison.
You know, yeah, it's the Wizard of Oz.
Amoeba jelly beans flying around, yeah.
Right, so that's silly nonsense land, but made believable.
Yeah. Not enough can be said about how this movie looks to the eye.
I don't know if this factors in with the visual effects or not. I guess it would. The 3D was phenomenal.
That's
the
point I wanted
it.
To bring up. I saw this one in 3D. I haven't seen a movie in 3D in probably 5 years because I just couldn't. Never thought they added anything. Right. So I don't know if that technology has gotten increasingly
better. Well, there's a couple.
Better.
Usually, like in a 3D movie, especially when it first came out, like there would be a few reach at the screen and grab the butterflies, right? They'll right. do like one or two shots, like Jumanji did it. Like they walk into a, and then there's all
it's
the
gratuitous.
Butterflies. Like
yeah,
Guardians
it's
of the Galaxy,
right
they have,
for...
you know, Groot does that thing and all the little. Lightning bugs.
It's playing
whatever.
Just for the 3D audience.
Exactly. Yeah. There's none of that in this.
No, but I thought this was the first movie I saw in 3D where I thought the viewing experience was actually enhanced just
yeah,
because
just,
of the visuals.
It's, you felt depth
yeah.
in each shot and you didn't see like almost ghosting. You saw someone ghosting, but you didn't see like ghosting of the foreground. Like it just obvious. This is foreground. This is middle.
Right.
That is background. No, it was almost seamlessly
it
together.
It was as close to being like you were there as anything I've seen, certainly in the 3D realm. And I mean, I have never seen, I've never gone to a movie and said, I'm glad I saw that in 3D.
Right.
And I did last night. You have to see this for the visuals alone. We're gonna have gripes yes. about story, but visuals out of this world. Really good.
I'm remembering like the first audience that saw motion pictures in general.
Right.
The legend is that the train was coming at them on the screen and they all got up and freaked
out. Dove
out
of the way.
And ran away. Yeah. Like is that so this was
except for the people with the curly mustaches that were already, you know, tying maidens to the tracks.
Yeah, they're just focused on the mustache. this was like I don't want to say groundbreaking, but like if they watched it, they would have seizures and die.
Well,
their brains would explode.
I mean, penicillin would also make them go crazy.
True, Mike.
So
a couple things on cinematography and production design. Again, as good as it's ever been, I thought San Francisco was a playground. The working San Francisco and I guess Metro Atlanta for the car chase, because it looked like the car chase in Deadpool. I think that's a lot of the same.
Yeah, it did. I was going to say in Civil War, too.
How they shot the cities and our superheroes in the cities was extraordinary to me. And you know they're offset, really. They're going out there, playground Atlanta, playground San Francisco. I was amazed. And then the cinematography to me really stood out there.
The wide shots, too, the high angle shots, if you're dealing with the stuff that becomes so big, not only Giant Man, but also the building. You've seen that in the preview as well. It shrinks and gets bigger, the office building.
Right.
There's a scene towards the end where that kind of just pops up in the bay, and it's really, really extremely well done, well shot.
And then a couple of the art categories, production design, costume design, makeup and hairstyling. I mean, that ghost outfit was so cool. The Wasp, Ant-Man.
I love everything about the ghost character.
Then the retro outfit for Michael Douglas.
Yeah.
I thought everything, like even the laboratory and the ants working in the laboratory, so artistic. I know the comic books are source material for it, but we're touting all these indie movies at the end of the day for production design.
Sure.
We're touting all these period movies, period pieces for costume design. Why doesn't Marvel movies get pub
equal recognition?
Because this is so awesome.
And this is a drum we've been beating for a while. Now,
detailed.
Let me put it to you like this as far as the visuals go in this movie. This is a $130 million budget, reportedly.
Right.
Infinity War is a $300 million budget. You said you thought the Infinity War ones were more impressive, which
yes,
I don't think anyone's going to argue
in
with
terms
you.
Of the art categories, I would definitely hold that fact. Visual effects is debatable. We're going to debate it in our Oscar
were
lines.
You, if you were an Oscar voter, if you had the vote, would the budget come into play there? Seeing
honestly,
what Ant-Man pulled off on such a smaller budget, less than half?
I would vote for both of them. And no, I just think you got to vote for the best at the end of the day. I think
okay.
that's what it should be. It's not it's
and I
not
ask that because I don't know
dollar.
How I fall on it. I'm not sure.
I don't know. To me, that's what I would do.
Okay. Good.
And that's
I
what
mean,
I would do for every
category. Yeah.
But that's just me. Sound, Mike, I can't remember a lot of the sound soundtrack.
I'm not going to talk about score or soundtrack.
It kind of worked though, right?
Yeah, it was great. It set the mood for a superhero movie. We've come to expect it from Marvel. But if dialogue is sound,
okay.
Oh my God, the expositional dialogue in this.
Yeah.
It's so weak.
So all right. performances, maybe before we go dive into the script a little bit, non-spoilers here. I think Scott Lang slash Ant-Man, I think Paul Rudd is more comfortable in the role here.
I think this was written more for his talents, too.
Yeah, he's kind of goofing around. I thought he was very stiff, very rigid in the beginning of the last movie. He was just, like, holding back. He's like, oh, my God, I'm a movie star. Oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. What do I do? And then he wasn't, like, comfortable in it. He was trying to, like, be cool when he should just be a goofy hero, right?
A comic, and then he's a goofy hero in this one.
Yeah, I love that. I love the father-daughter scenes to begin. I thought Evangeline Lilly had some issues, though. I think they touted her as a complicated character on the promotional tour. I don't see that at all. I will flush this out in spoilers. Yes, she is a badass. I love every minute she's on screen, kicking butt, fighting bad guys. I thought it was awesome how she does it. I thought it was awesome how she teams up with Ant-Man and how the two of them fight together. I mean, we were gushing right after in the theater. And
yeah, I'm with you. I was a big fan of how she, I loved her in the first movie. I loved her in this one. I know you say you have some issues, so I'm interested to get into those in the spoiler
section. The fights with Ghost. Oh my God. Yeah. We already talked about it in visual effects. Thrilled. So Michael Douglas bothered me less in this movie, Michael, than he did in the first, but he still has his moments in this one.
The young Michael Douglas, I can't get past.
He's still Basil Exposition. Yeah. But
He was Basil Exposition.
And yes, his face is creepy.
The young Michael Douglas has the creepiest, that CGI'd face that they give him.
He's just got
so,
like,
off-putting.
Turkey neck, or he's got like old man neck, and they can't cover it. There's no way to cover it because of the shape of it.
I expected it to be like, you know, he's a bad guy in every horror movie. His face just starts peeling off and shows the real Michael Douglas.
Yeah, it's very, very strange. Yeah. Michelle Pfeiffer, her character makes zero effing sense to me. I will explain this also. I think it's utterly ridiculous.
I have a gripe with your gripe about her character.
All right, I need some help, but we only saw this once. We saw this just once. I love the supporting cast in this movie.
This is a loaded cast. It's a lot of likable people, a lot of likable talents on screen. Everybody, when Paul Rudd has a script that's tailored to Paul Rudd's talents, he's great. When Michelle Pfeiffer and Michael Douglas are usually dependable in everything. Evangeline Lilly, admittedly, I didn't know much about outside of Lost, but I loved her in the first one. I said that about a billion times already, but I thought she was capable in this one of holding her own.
A lot of these characters get their own moments, get their own jokes. Yeah. Spider-Man writers, they were very generous to the entire ensemble in the Spider-Man movie. I think they tried to do that here. I think there's some hit and miss, I guess, as we segue into the script. But yeah, Walton Goggins is just very charming. It's like this southern black market. I don't want to say arms dealer, but he's kind of
a black market dealer.
Michael Pena has a moment.
Hilarious.
And maybe five
that
moments.
That trio is great.
You know, the T.I., the Russian buddy, Dalmatian.
I would love
there.
To see them play a bigger role in like the second or the fourth Avengers. Or
Randall Park is consistently funny as the FBI agent.
He was so expositional in the beginning, though,
yes,
for me.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I don't have to remind you that if you speak to Hank Pym, it's going to be 20 years in jail. Yeah.
So
nobody talks like that.
Here's the thing, like Thor Ragnarok, Guardians of the Galaxy, Deadpool, of course. We talked about how much they relish those conventional moments because they spin those conventions off into their own unique meta jokes, right? From Thor Ragnarok taking care of the exposition in a play that Loki's put on at the beginning of Thor Ragnarok to Deadpool.
Clever.
Just literally stating a convention, to having the James Bond credits, right?
Yeah.
And just make it as a parody. So from parodies to totally just jumping sharks, Marvel movies and Marvel properties.
They thumb their nose at it, at themselves.
This movie tries some of that, and I'm going to pinpoint it in spoilers. So I would say that they're more creative than the last movie. Because the last movie is just like Basil Exposition, Michael Douglas. Every time he opens his goddamn mouth, I want to punch him. By the way,
you had a big problem with him.
Yeah, man. This movie, at least they spread that around, like Lawrence Fishburne and
Randall Park, much of it.
But there's also a couple, like there's a flashback scene, which is awesome. There's the Michael Pena scene. He gets one of those scenes again from the first movie, which is awesome.
Which is funny, yeah.
And they incorporate exposition into that, which is fun. So I think they have Randall Park working in some jokes. They were trying to work Michael Douglas jokes in. My biggest problem is that some of the jokes for some of the characters, some of the few jokes for especially the female characters, like Judy Greer has the worst dad joke since our Tom Cruise episode.
I thought you were going to say since the beginning of this one.
Since I made it terrible. Yeah. since my dad made a joke for the beginning of this
I hated Judy Greer and Bobby Cannavale in this. I hated the way the script treated them and what it gave them.
Evangeline Lilly, I just remember just almost squirreling around my head looking at you when Evangeline Lilly made just the stinkiest joke I've ever heard.
Which one was that?
I forget. I was looking at you. Well, okay. Here's the thing. We only seen this once. We usually see movies like three times before our OSPs, but whatever.
Speaks to me.
And you're like, okay.
That there's some forgettable stuff in this. Yeah. And in a lot of Marvel movies, a lot of it is memorable. And this one, we started off this review, I said, and we'll get to it in spoilers, it's my biggest gripe with the movie. I said, I can't remember what this character did outside of these two minor things.
It's almost like a Mission Impossible movie where we're like, it's very forgettable. It's who knows what
happened. Right.
We kind of remember some money shots. I remember the trailer. I remember a couple of jokes. So I think I laughed much more in this one than the first.
Go into this saying, I want to see some awesome visuals. And I just want to see a popcorn movie. I want to have a couple chuckles.
And I want to go, wow. Yeah. I want to
go into it with that mindset. Don't go into it with, oh my God, I got to see what happened after Infinity War.
Right.
Because you're going to get disappointed. And exactly. I don't think either one of us went in with that mindset. And we still have some negative stuff. But we went in kind of giving it a chance. And we enjoyed it. We have some faults with it. But we enjoyed it by and large.
So I think the last thing we'll do for non-spoilers here is kind of Oscar lens. Do we think visual effects should be nominated? Should they be nominated over Avengers Infinity War and Black Panther? Should all three of them be nominated? Production design, cinematography. I think this is a technical marvel.
It is.
I'm going to bang the table for this movie.
I haven't seen three movies more impressive visually than this one yet.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you could argue, you can nitpick where it is among Black Panther and Infinity War, but it's better than anything we've seen.
It's the versatility in these effects. Like, let's just say, remember the beginning of Avengers when they're fighting the warlock guy? Aw.
Yeah.
Like in the city. This movie is more city fighting, right?
Yeah.
So as good as that looked in Avengers, but we only had one scene of it, you get a whole movie of kind of like the chase scene, the spy scenes, where they're fighting in the city, which was phenomenal.
Yeah.
You've seen it in the trailers, but it looks so seamless, and then you add the 3D to it. God damn. It might be a visual masterpiece.
If nothing else, it's making it very hard on the Academy to exclude Marvel from those categories. This one won't see a Best Picture nod, but whether or not a Marvel picture breaks through to Best Picture, we'll see. But this, right. I mean, Marvel is making a statement towards the Academy, I think.
I would probably lessen the chances for production or costume design. I think cinematography probably doesn't happen, but visual effects for this movie, for Avengers Infinity War, I think they have to happen, in my opinion.
I would say Black Panther too, but I don't see three Marvel movies getting. Two is going to be tough to do. One needs to be there, but they all deserve it without question.
No performances are really worthy of Oscar. I don't think any of the big categories happen for this. We have problems with the script, screenwriting, so that's not going to get an adapted screenplay. Screen Junkies, they were touting Lang's daughter, the little girl, at the Oscars. I will say she does a great job. The daughter, father-daughter.
She's not Oscar caliber, but if nothing else, if the MCU is something that goes on and on, there is a character in the comics called Stature that is Cassandra Lang.
Okay.
And she has Ant-Man's abilities, essentially, and she's Scott Lang's daughter, and that's who they're setting Cassie up to be. I want to be your partner, et cetera, like she does in this movie. So I think they're doing an outstanding job setting the stage for that.
Yeah, I mean, she's got some jokey scenes with her dad, some cutesy scenes with her dad, but then she has a few emotional scenes, and I was into her performance. I thought it was very good.
And she acts like the actual offspring of Paul Rudd would.
If she's included in like that Critics' Choice Award for Best Child Actor.
The Florida totally Project against. Girl got it last year. Sure.
Yeah, but if she gets a nod, a nomination, I don't think we'd be shocked.
For that.
Right.
Yeah, not for the... I can't see her breaking ground in an Oscars. But who knows? I never know.
So what do you think? Some final thoughts? Watch or don't watch here?
Like I said, if you go into this wanting to see awesome visuals, maybe take an acid trip, I don't know. But you'll be wildly impressed with the visuals, and you'll have some laughs.
fun, charming movie. I enjoyed spending time in the MCU again. That was fun. I can't wait till the Russo brothers kind of get hold of this technology and this storyline in future films. We're going to have a little something on that in the double spoiler section. I really want to see them have Ghost, the Wasp, Ant-Man, just in terms of how they're going to fight together.
Yeah.
All of them.
With you, man. I'm totally with you. I think there was some good groundwork laid for what's going on in the MCU going forward. I think this is a visual marvel.
Visual
feast. No pun intended.
Yeah.
It's funny. And if you could take a funny Marvel movie, you'll find value in this. If you can only have Marvel movies be serious and deal with end of the world stakes anymore, then you're going to have problems.
Yeah, so temper your expectations. Try to see the IMAX 3D maybe for this movie. Try to enjoy it that way. Watch for both of us.
Yeah, if you can see it in 3D, do it.
Mm.
Let's dance.
Spoilers ahead! This is a spoiler warning.
Spoilers. 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 Spoilers.
All right, this is the spoiler section for Ant-Man and the Wasp, the first of two spoiler sections. Mm-hmm. If you want to hear about the specs, you want to hear about the box office, you want to hear about some of the performance reviews, that's all going to be in the first 35 or so minutes of this podcast. From here on out, we're talking full spoilers, everything to do with the twists and turns, the ins and outs of the plot of this movie and the script, some of its shortcomings, some of the things we liked. So if you don't want to hear about those yet, if you haven't seen the movie yet, you can stop now, go back and listen to the first 35 minutes of this podcast. If you are interested, if you have seen the movie or you just want to know what happens, you're in the right place. So let's start with some carryovers.
And
some
FYI, issues. This is a standalone movie in many ways. Avengers Infinity War will not be spoiled by us until the double spoiler section. So if you've seen Ant-Man but you have not seen Avengers Infinity War,
what is wrong with you?
No, you're a little weird, but you'll like Avengers Infinity War, I think. But definitely don't worry. We'll have the double spoiler section.
Yes.
So what do you think, Mike, of Lawrence Fishburne's
Why was
character?
He in this movie?
What
did he do in this movie? Why was he, if he was in this movie, why wasn't he Morpheus?
Now, I thought...
he would have had the same impact.
Yeah, I thought about it a little more. He definitely is ghost conscious. Like, the biggest thing he does...
But see, that's the easy argument. Okay, and we talked about this.
He convinces kind of ghosts not to kidnap the daughter.
Great, good for him. So he's ghost conscious, right, okay. And he does have a point where Ghost is so desperate to get her hands on the lab of the Pyms because it's the only technology that could save her life, basically, because she has this rare disease where her cells are splitting apart, gives her her abilities. And Lawrence Fishburne talks her out of kidnapping Cassie Pym, or Cassie Lang, to get basically blackmail for the lab.
Gives a great college lecture.
Do you need? Yeah. Do you need to humanize someone that's fighting to save their own life?
Right.
I don't think that's something you need to give a conscience to.
And she also has that flashback exposition where she's evil monologuing like the best villain we've seen in the series.
They're
tied to a chair. She's telling the story of her being Winter Soldier.
And it's more expositional dialogue. There's more issues with it. But she's a unique character, so I'm more apologetic to that. But
what I'm saying is you have plenty of opportunities for her to gain sympathy of the
sure,
audience.
Oh, sure, sure. But I don't even think you need sympathy. Mike, if I told you you have 2 weeks to live, you don't give a shit if you're doing right
she's
or wrong.
She's crank, but like, she's crank.
Yeah, like you just want to fucking live.
She's
like anybody does. You don't care. You don't care who you harm. Ethics are out the window, man.
True.
So... she doesn't, you don't need to humanize a conscious, you don't need to put a conscious or humanize that type of character, okay? All Lawrence Fishburne does in this script is... Get surrounded by ants! That's all he does! He ends scenes being held hostage by giant ants, and then they cut to a new scene, and then the next scene, he's not surrounded by ants.
How about when he walks in a room and he's like, wait, I'm kind of a bad guy here. I'm the surrogate father to this girl. You have your surrogate. You have your real daughter.
That's
I have
exactly
a surrogate
it.
Daughter.
That's exactly why
Paul
he's
Rudd
here.
Paul Rudd has a daughter. This is a father-daughter movie.
That's all he's here for. And he's the beats are the same beats. Oh, the guy that I thought was my business partner in the first movie turns out to be the bad guy.
Yes.
Oh, look, Lawrence Fishburne, I thought he was my business partner. He's really a bad guy, but he's a conflicted bad guy because we need him for more movies.
Now, by the way, we're getting through our worst scenes here.
Oh, it's my worst scene. Lawrence Fishburne's involvement, and it's such a shame because I'm a Fishburne fan,
right.
And they could have done so much more with him, but he is so unnecessary and superfluous to
the
script.
I wish they didn't have the scene between him and Paul Rudd in the trailer, because that scene was funny, and they had another joke in there that was funny. It was good banter. It was a funny scene. He does the, in the movie, college professor thing where he gives the lecture that
on
is
point
so...
too.
The key to everything, which I didn't really pay attention to, something about refractors and whatever. I didn't get how the quantum realm connected between Ghost and her powers that were killing her and the shrink, whatever, the endless shrinking thing of the quantum realm. I didn't get how those connected. I know they said it, so I didn't follow the science of this movie. It's probably a me problem.
Basically, all I derived from it, he was talking about essentially what Ghost was and how the quantum realm relates to her in scientific terms. But
okay.
Essentially, all you have to know and all that's explained to us as the audience is that Ghost's being saved depends on her extracting energy from Michelle Pfeiffer's character, who is being taken out of the quantum realm by Michael Douglas.
And so why wasn't she helping them then?
Because to her, it could only she needed to stop them in that tunnel so she could derive the energy out of Michelle Pfeiffer's character before they got back to real life. Because they need a conflict in the movie. That's why.
I guess. Yeah, that didn't really work for me. And I didn't really follow it. Maybe I'll see it again on my actual movie pass. I'll just see it standard and enjoy it that way. Yeah. I don't buy the relationship between Rudd and Lily in this movie. I think that's going to be my worst element. I don't like Evangeline Lily's character, how they just allowed her to be one-dimensional.
Lawrence Fishburne would have played a more impactful role if he was the third lover in that love triangle between Paul Rudd and Evangeline Lily.
That would have been, that was the key that would have unlocked my issue.
He was so... Oh, God. I have less of a problem with the love story.
All right,
I
so
do.
Here's my thing. What's her flaw? Does her character have a flaw? In the first movie, she's more complex because she's a double agent. She is doing lousy things with the billionaire businessman.
Yeah, but you don't apologize.
She's also mentoring Paul Rudd, but making him pay for like kicking his ass and making him taking out the anger she has for her father. And she's pissed at her father for not allowing her to be the Wasp. She's taking that out. It's like she's got all these little, these edgy things about her in that first movie. Like you could say, all right, she's a badass. But she's also kind of a jerk, and she's not afraid to go at somebody, and she's also, lying. Her whole life is a lie, where she's a double agent. She has all these layers in that first movie. Where is the layers in this movie? Look at the Black Panther cast, Mike. I'm not going to spoil Black Panther here, but Lupita Nyong'o is the antithesis of Chadwick Boseman at the beginning of that movie. Chadwick Boseman is doing one thing, and she is literally gone rogue as a spy doing another thing and arguing with him, ex-boyfriend, girlfriend, arguing with him from the very beginning of that movie. Suri, the female character who's in charge of all the technology, totally immature. She's like a little sister. The whole kingdom just portrays her as immature. Look where she got us. It's a huge political problem with the family, right? Danai Gurira will protect her king to a fault as a loyal guard, to a fault until she has to make a crisis decision in that movie. They all are so, and there's very few scenes to characterize them, but you see their flaws front and center. What is the Wasp, Evangeline Lily Hope Dines' flaw in this movie? She's just a thorough ass kicker. She immediately is in sync with Paul Rudd when they start fighting together again. I was expecting a total Guardians of the Galaxy, just one thing after another, goofy thing goes wrong, and they have to somehow, that's what Guardians of the Galaxy did so well. Like even the Spider-Man writers should have done this perfectly. There should have been 1,000 things that went wrong for them during their fights, but everything is like smooth and awesome, and they're really, really good at teaming up. Right from the start.
Would you have liked it more if she was cornered by giant ants? You said a lot there, and it's a lot to unpack. You hit on what was my biggest problem with her, which was part of what gave her such great depth in the first Ant-Man was this complicated relationship with her father, who she never really saw eye to eye with at certain times. She was working as this double agent, and that's all basically forgiven by this one. They're working as a team in coherent unison and blah, blah, blah. She's kind of mad at Paul Rudd. That's supposed to be, yeah, so I think, her biggest fault.
Here's what she's reduced to. She's doesn't believe in Paul Rudd's character,
right,
the protagonist, until he has to redeem himself.
Right.
So that she believes in and affirms him. Like, she, her approval is the key to this movie, which is nice to see. But what's the difference between her and every sidelined female character in a sports movie about the man's career, about the man, the coach husband, right? What's the difference between this character? Obviously, she kicks ass for 2 hours.
And that's the difference. But that's the difference. But that is the big difference.
So we're moving along slowly, but her character's agency is still dependent. Like, her function in
her
the plot.
Her motivation is
Let's put it this
on
way. Her function in the plot is not as her own character. It's to affirm our protagonist.
It's upsetting
when it was supposed to be this complicated female hero. What's complicated about her?
No, you make a lot of good points. I'll tell you where I stand on her, with her. I was more impressed with Marvel's handling of their romance because it felt authentic.
Yeah, they added some issues to that because it's been 2 years since they hung out.
Right.
He did not ask her to go to Germany and
to
help
fight in Civil
to fight
War.
In Civil War.
She took offense to that, and they're trying to be standoffish towards each other, but they have these long gazing stares.
And then they immediately fight great with one another.
Right.
Perfectly in
sync.
So I
appreciated that aspect. I appreciated her obviously being an ass kicker. She's not without flaws, but not the flaws that you need for a good character. It's her character was written not
the
as
Russo
perfectly as
brothers. The Russo brothers, when they team heroes up, these heroes have a conflict with one another. The Guardians of the Galaxy, when those characters are constantly arguing with one another while they're fighting bad guys. And they're screwing up left and right. These characters had the perfect opportunity to do this. They could have been arguing about their own lives the entire movie.
Nah.
Their relationship, their romance, everything. She could have just been kicking ass to spite him. They could have had a great back and forth, and it's a total missed opportunity. They didn't have it.
It's tough. It's really tough to see it, to not see it that way. It really is. It's an incredible point by you.
All right, so my next big worst thing. So these are the worst things. Again, we gushed kind of in the non-spoilers about the visual masterpiece that this movie is. Michelle Pfeiffer, the original Wasp, awesome flashback in the beginning, going subatomic. I had an issue of if she's ever shrinking, how does she disarm the bomb? All right, so she got it on the way down into the shrunken subatomic world. Okay, fine. Because my brother's like, no, she clipped the wires as she was shrinking.
Yeah.
Okay, so that we saw that. I guess I wasn't paying attention. Anyway.
You're just blinded with rage.
I like that scene. I thought that was some of the best visual effects of the movie. I know they reprised that scene from the last movie, but
That's how the movie opens.
I was in awe of that entire scene, that setup. Here's the problem with her character. It's preposterous.
To you.
Right now, without explanation on the quantum realm, to me it's preposterous. I don't understand it. So I need your help to explain this to me. Now, Michael Douglas, at the end of the movie, goes to save her in his boat, his inner space boat, right?
Yes.
Goes down there, gets out of the boat. 10 seconds later, his brain is making him insane.
Yes.
How did she not go nuts herself? Because she had no one to save her.
Right. You're not wrong. But we also don't know what happens after those 10 seconds. Maybe that's when he was getting infused with powers that she clearly has because of the quantum realm. Maybe
it's not explained. But you established that.
But wait a minute. So you can't have every little thing be explained. And the quantum realm clearly is going to play a bigger role in the MCU going forward. So I don't think all secrets should be revealed.
The evidence they give us it refutes it, if anything. But, like, okay, because Michael Douglas is about to go batshit crazy. Mm-hmm. As far as we know, and she lays hands on his head and saves him.
Right.
There's no one to lay hands on her head and save her. So you're theorizing. Come on, you're going out on a limb to theorize away my issue here. You might be right.
But my overall theory of it is that they could have the quantum realm be whatever they want. I don't think you should have an explanation of how the quantum realm works in this. That's not the point of this movie. The point of this movie was just to bring her out.
Well, that's debatable because this movie is like episodic.
Well, her role, nice. Her you the, could just, the role she fills.
The only point of this movie could be to explain the quantum realm, so you actually set up Avengers Infinity War.
I think that's what Captain Marvel's is. But
all right. Well, I don't understand the quantum realm. We'll talk about it in our double spoiler section. Here's my other problem. Just in terms of regular psychology yes. for most humans, a prisoner in solitary confinement goes crazy in like a few weeks. They start hallucinating after like 6 months. You don't know the powers of the quantum realm.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You're right.
But Michael Douglas goes crazy in 10 seconds.
But you don't know what happens after those 10 seconds.
Michelle Pfeiffer should have been Gollum times 100.
What if in the 15th second he gets all the powers in the universe? What if that's what happens in the quantum realm?
You're using a what if to explain away my logical...
But it's not logical. It's the quantum realm. You can only get there if you're a molecule. There is no logic.
It's if I can't buy the logic of this story, then I don't know what to do. She should be batshit crazy. Her brain should have been mush. She should have died. What does she eat? What does she drink? What is happening down
there?
It's
not real.
30 years as a hermit. There's nobody down there.
It's not a real place.
And she's like cool as a cucumber when she says hi to her family after 30 years
yeah.
later in the movie. Makes no fucking sense.
Maybe
I don't buy it for a second.
Maybe she feasts on thoughts down there. Maybe you don't know.
It's utterly preposterous.
It could be. No, it's not. They just didn't tell you yet. You have to wait for the explanation.
Oh, they didn't tell me in the movie where it's used. And you allow that. You're a goddamn lawyer!
No, but Mike, they're setting the stage.
I can't understand you right now.
They're setting the stage for later on.
They're setting the stage when they explain the last movie and the next movie. Great.
Yeah, you don't need to know all the secrets of everything yet. Were you mad because you didn't know if Thanos actually completed the snap at the end of Infinity War?
I was mad. No, that's the end
when
of the
Gamora
movie.
When Gamora brought up?
The very end of the movie. You're using this as ammunition to play out this story in this movie. It's the fucking premise
the
of the
point.
Movie.
The point of this
the
movie
premise of
not...
the movie is to save the mother.
Yes, that's it.
Which
that's
is
it.
Utterly preposterous that she's still alive. Plot hole
you,
number
you
one
can't say
in
that.
The mid beginning of this movie.
You can't say
I
that.
I am saying
but
it
you
because
don't know
they
that.
Didn't explain it going in. I'm saying
you
it.
Don't
I
have to.
You, they didn't explain it going in.
They know
killed
nothing.
Other
Wait,
movies for
they
more.
They know nothing about the quantum realm. The only time anyone's ever come back from it is Scott Lang doing it in the first movie. Right?
Right.
So they know nothing about it. How are they going to know anything about it, about what it does? How are we going to be? I mean, unless Michelle
He's
Pfeiffer gets
having
her own...
hallucinations about and bad dreams about it, and he was there for freaking 30 seconds.
Right.
She's there for 30 years, and her brain is not mush.
You need to watch,
it
more,
makes
no
need
to watch more wrestling storylines.
I guess so.
You need
because
to watch more wrestling
I don't buy
lines.
This one from the beginning.
Because you need
but
to let things play out.
Here's somehow... I still have fun at this movie, and somehow I still like this movie.
All that aside about the quantum realm, which I think we need to let it play, but that's my stance. Your stance is that you wanted to
well,
explain
now. Well, here's where I'll meet you in the middle. I did let it play. That, as mad as I just got at you for some reason. This is what movie criticism does. As mad as I still enjoyed this movie thoroughly. In the beginning of the movie, I remember saying, fuck you. And then I'm like, okay, you made me laugh. Okay, that's really cool to look at. Okay, fine.
That
I enjoyed myself.
That ant is taking a bath.
The ant is playing the drums.
So, that's a whole other thing. Paul Rudd is supposed to be on house arrest, and they give this giant ant, who are the most important characters in this movie, I realize as I'm talking. This giant ant is wearing his ankle bracelet and running around his house.
Love the ants.
It was very funny. But
you have one more issue.
Yeah, the last worst scene, worst problem, biggest issue I had. Every Spider-Man franchise that we've dealt with had its worst iterations when they overdid the villains and tried to stuff as many villains as they could.
Yeah, this is a three-headed monster.
Right. I mean, Venom, Goblin, and Sandman were in Spider-Man 3. Electro, Green Goblin, and Rhino were in Amazing Spider-Man 2. People hated those movies because there was no backstory. There wasn't enough enriching of their storylines. I would argue Ghost has an enriching storyline.
FBI... Walton Goggins. Three-headed. Again,
and
it's a
and you
formula.
Could say Lawrence Fishburne's character. I mean, he's the one that turns on him in the beginning.
Yeah, he's kind of the
yeah, he turns back.
The,
yeah.
yeah, he's kind of
but
the
he,
back
we,
and forth.
You know, he's introduced as a good guy.
Hero's
in a turn.
Journey. Yeah.
Right.
They,
so,
they have a name for that character that goes back and forth. I forget it now.
Benedict Arnold. Benedict Morpheus.
The double H.
So, there's too many villains for me, and it hurts the story. The Randall Park character is purely comic relief when he could have been something significant.
Yeah. Are they making him the next Agent Coulson, we wonder?
Maybe.
I'd be okay with that. I mean,
yeah,
he's kind of funny. I mean,
he was funny, but yeah. he you know, he's trying to catch this guy out of his house on house arrest and put him in jail for 20 years, as he so thoroughly explained to us.
But he's doing magic tricks.
And he's like thinking that he wants to take him to dinner.
That was okay.
It's an imbalance.
A lot of the jokes in this movie almost played. A lot of them play. And then a few, very few, just fall flat for me. So
You're not wrong. But my biggest issue was there's too many bad guys.
Yeah.
And I hate when that's a problem. I don't like saying that because I think more characters is cool to see on screen. One, I mean, that's just as a fan. But you don't do enough to develop all these characters. I mean, Walter Coggins, what the hell is he?
It's a really good point, Mike, because when Marvel has focused the villain, we get some of our best movies. Black Panther, the villain is focused, laser focused in that Michael B. Jordan character. You spend the time to make him sympathetic.
Yeah.
Right?
Infinity War,
it's Thanos central, so that's the most complicated villain yet.
And I guess you could forgive it when the big villain has other guys working for him. Like, right. Michael Keaton had his construction guys.
But all those guys are there to flush out the characteristics of Michael Keaton.
Exactly. They're just limbs on the tree.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas these are three separate trees, separate trees. And it's tough to water them all properly in 2 hours.
Yeah, and it's fun in a movie where that's like constantly being chased by different people. So that's fun. It works in a lot of books that I read, fantasy sci-fi books, adventure books, spy books, thrillers, where you have that multi-headed dragon.
Yeah.
So that happens a lot. I mean, you just mentioned the antecedents, but I think there's a bad exposition might be a result of all those forces because it's not as focused of a story.
No, I agree.
They have to explain so much so quickly. That might be the end result. So we're going to get to more some good
stuff. We've hammered
now.
This movie enough, so let's talk about some positives, some of our favorite scenes here.
Action is great. Wasp is kicking ass. I loved the Wasp in terms of how they used her in the air, how she went small, jumping around, fighting. I thought that was so cool. Obviously, she's never a damsel in distress. She's always saving him.
Yeah.
she's
as an action star,
right?
She's awesome in this movie.
He can trick Ghost. She can actually stand up and fight Ghost.
Yeah,
so that worked too. So that in terms of her agency in battle, I mean, she's all about it.
She's so, you know, and I know we just took all this time tearing her down, but she is an extremely capable superhero, and it's great to see.
Yeah.
We're fresh off Infinity War, where we had that scene highlighting all the badass women fighting each other, one another, and this is, you take another badass fighting woman and she's kicking all these dudes' asses, and it's great to see.
I thought the scenes between her and Michael Douglas were a little bit better, scenes between her and Michelle Pfeiffer. I mean, Michelle Pfeiffer is as good of a dramatic actor as we have. If you could put any performance in this movie up there for something, you know, a comic book movie award in terms of dramatic performances, hers was very good. I mean, she pulled off the few emotional scenes like the little girl did.
What did you think about Paul Rudd playing Michelle Pfeiffer?
I thought it was funny. It was amusing. I didn't laugh super hard at it, but I enjoyed it.
I thought it was very creatively done to have Paul Rudd be Paul Rudd.
It was
because
a
that's where that's where he's best in that silly comedy type thing. There's a scene where the whole through line is that Michelle Pfeiffer is accessing Paul Rudd's mind via the quantum realm because they've both been experienced there, and so she kind of takes over control of his body at times. And there's a scene where Paul Rudd has to act like he is the Michelle Pfeiffer character and is holding Michael Douglas and Evangeline Lilly's hands and saying, "I missed you guys," blah, blah, blah. I thought that was very creative to include that.
Yes, the big gags in this movie in terms of Paul Rudd suit not working and he's shrunken like a little kid with the sweatshirt. That was really funny.
Great
throughout
gag.
Running through the school, you know, to get the trophy and the suit. Loved it. And then the truth serum gag had me laughing
great.
The hardest with Michael Pena.
Yes.
You get that great Michael Pena exposition thing, which actually he uses that with another anecdote during that exposition thing.
But that's the thing. You could have it be laid out so plainly like that. Just be creative about it.
That was a creative way to do exposition. So I really enjoyed that. And the last movie, it was just a gag.
Right.
It really didn't help. But this time, Michael Pena tells a story about the two principal characters. Yeah. So that really...
I really appreciated those couple scenes.
The action stood out to me. It was very coherent. and I loved how they brought the forces together, how they kind of had fun with the different forces of antagonism on the chase, because that doesn't work sometimes. That's overly convoluted. But Walton Goggins is going after him, and then when Walton Goggins gets caught with the truth,
that's my favorite scene. It's basically the third act of the movie, but yeah. that whole car chase and the game of tag with the lab is my favorite scene. I think everything comes to a crescendo there. Everything that we've been introduced to up to that point is really given this coherent playground to play out in, and you have, the comedy, Ant-Man's using that truck as a rolling thing.
Terrific, yes.
We have the comedy, we have the effects of the cars going big and little, Michael Pena needing to come up with a new Matchbox car to play with. We have some still lame expositional dialogue. Oh, we can't control the lab without that remote. We need it. It's very important. You know, shit.
Right.
So, I mean, there's a good and a bad, but it's really encompassing of what this movie is. All in one. And the action, of course. Evangeline Lilly going in and out of cars, kicking the shit out of people. I thought it was awesome.
I think I wrote down, in terms of the comedy, that we laughed with this movie throughout.
Yeah.
Many times. It was fairly consistent. We laughed at this movie many times in the theater as well. Like, you and I looking at each other, scoffing at something. So, in terms, we've gushed over the action pretty consistently good. In terms of the comedy, it's hit and miss. And that's kind of my overall review with this movie. It's very hit. I mean, we got some huge hits in it. And the story problems for me, things that I wanted explained, and a couple of the comedy lulls, and then obviously the kind of, it didn't give me anything new from the trailers. It's miss. It does miss at times for me. I guess we're going to go into some final thoughts and grades before we do the double spoilers, because I want you to explain Quantum Realm, Avengers Infinity War.
It's more of a theory, but yeah.
That's a good theory. I'm excited for it.
You hit it pretty much. There's issues with the story, and there's issues with some of the characters and what they do. Again, I think this has value as a popcorn. It has value as a Marvel movie. Is it important to the Marvel through line? Stay tuned for our second spoiler section that's after this.
Yes, visual masterpiece. Maybe they'll explain it in future films. Maybe I'll be okay. So now grades. I'm very curious. I'm usually the much more giving grader. You're a little tougher. Now, I've killed this movie harder than you have in this episode, but somehow I'm going to have a higher grade, aren't I? I have a B86.
I'm anywhere between a 70 and an 89. I think I'm like an 84, a B minus right in there, because I did enjoy it more than I disliked it, but some of the things I disliked were so strong and avoidable. So I think I'm in that range.
So I had more fire, and I gave it a higher grade. I just think the visual strength of this movie is so good.
You're not wrong. I left the theater last night. I was in 85, and I docked at 1 point since thinking about it.
So. I kind of gushed in the non-spoiler section over the visuals, and I did the kind of opposite. My original thought was B85, and I was like, you know what? It's kind of the strengths.
So we were in the same ballpark. We just took a step in either direction.
I had to plus one. So
because I'm a dick, and you're a good critic.
Spoilers ahead.
Spoilers.
All right.
Spoilers. This is our second spoiler section where we explain where this fits into the MCU. No, keep going forever. We explain where this fits into the MCU, and I have a theory about how this plays
out
from here.
Throw it at me.
Okay.
This, I was amazed by this. You're gonna like this, folks.
I hope. Is this an important movie to the MCU? You could argue no. None of this really matters except for the post-credit scene.
Okay.
So the post-credit scene, Scott's in the Quantum Realm. They send him down there to collect more energy to help save Ghost or save other people because they realize it has healing properties. Ghost is on the run with Morpheus. He's down there because of Michelle Pfeiffer, Evangeline Lilly, Michael Douglas are going to pull him out. They're on this rooftop somewhere. And he's talking to them. He's in the Quantum Realm. He's collected his energy. He's like, all right, guys, I'm ready to go back. Nobody's there. Nobody's calling back to him, et cetera, et cetera. We go back to where they are, the three of them, and we see they've turned to ash.
Yes.
So the big reveal of this movie is that it was happening in real time with Infinity War. Thanos' snap of his fingers deleted Evangeline Lilly, Michelle Pfeiffer, Michael Douglas. What I've gathered and what I think, I haven't seen this laid out in this way anywhere.
And we have not read the comics, folks.
No, so I could be totally off base here and just sound like an ass like I do most times. What I think happens is I think Captain Marvel is going to be explaining the quantum realm. Okay. I think she, because if I remember right, she has a lot to do with it herself. I think I remember reading that, but regardless, I think she deals with how to go.
I would be surprised, because she doesn't shrink, though. Like, how does she? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't have it all fleshed out.
I don't know
out.
Either.
But I think she has to deal with the quantum realm and going in and out. And I think she explains, since her movie is based in the 80s, to Nick Fury, a younger Nick Fury, that, oh my God, me and my people, and I think this is what her movie's going to be about, have figured out a way to go back and forth to this place called the quantum realm.
And don't forget, at the end of Avengers Infinity War, Samuel Jackson is calling her before he says, motherfucker!
I think that's how Captain Marvel ends. Hey, if you ever have issues with shit's going haywire and people seem like they're disappearing, call me. I think this is the reason why. And I think it's them going back and forth to the quantum realm. Now, how does this tie into what Thanos did? I've always been of the belief that those characters aren't dead. I think we all think they aren't dead. But that the snap of the fingers sends them into an alternate reality or into the quantum realm itself. So I think that Scott, being in the quantum realm, is going to run into those people in the quantum realm, all the Avengers that are there. Nick Fury's there and is going to be able to inform them, because of what he learned in Captain Marvel, hey, she told me XYZ about the quantum realm and coming back, going to work with Hank Pym about being and the other scientists that are there, and bring them out. Tony Stark is somehow going to realize they're there, because Tony's still alive, presumably. And that whole fourth Avengers movie is going to be about bringing that whole group back to life and bringing anyone that was erased back to life.
So my first question, now this is fascinating to me, because that would be cool, because that and that could make sense. Marvel, it would make the Marvel science of it all work. Like, for Thanos to have this ability, and it's not really to kill everything, but it all just gets shrunk, whatever.
Yeah, because Marvel isn't dealing death all that often.
True. So that could work for me.
I mean, they do. It's an overstatement.
Really,
but whatever.
Well, they're going to have to explain the fact that the quantum realm is so vast by a factor of a bajillion, a number that hasn't come up with yet, because it's so small. And so just think about Earth. It's like a bajillion Earths. The space is almost infinite. So how does anybody run into anybody? I mean, they needed some super powered algorithm with all the black market tech in the world to find the signal to get to Michelle Pfeiffer that was only open for a window of 2 hours in this movie. So the fact that, I get it, you know, half the population, you're going to have millions or billions of chances to find people, but
it's
still hard.
I think is what is going to be the other side of the fourth Avengers movie. I think you're going to have the scientists that are alive in the quote-unquote real world working on some kind of location technology. You might have a couple instances of happenstance of them trying to find each other in the quantum realm. You have a lot of scientists in the quantum realm that can figure out ways to do stuff.
Comic book readers are just scoffing at
it. I'm sure.
But this is our theory, so movie watchers only, maybe.
Well, whether it's wrong or right, we'll see.
I think it's cool, and I think it could really work right from the start, because they set the groundwork up in this
because
movie.
Because I don't disagree. We are owed an explanation about how the quantum realm works. I totally agree.
This Marvel's done this before. Doctor Strange, you got a whole movie of inexplicable powers, but here's the thing. He learns those inexplicable powers for
a
whole movie, and then when he shows up in Avengers Infinity War, you don't need an origin story for Doctor Strange.
Right.
When he shows up in Thor Ragnarok, you don't need anything origin about him. He just does his things, when he does his thing, it's funny. They use it in comic scenarios to remind you of what he can
powers.
Do, right? Yeah. They weaponize it comedically, and that's what Marvel loves to do. So I would hope that Ant-Man accomplished something for the overall MCU, accomplished something for Avengers 4 leading up to it, because it's one of the few films they chose to lead up to it. So I hope the quantum realm will factor in.
I have a feeling, I was thinking about this too, I have a feeling that the Pyms and Scott Lang play a big role in Avengers 4.
Right.
And that's why they weren't included at all.
But won't you be pissed
War.
Off if, all right, Captain Marvel at the beginning of the next movie, Avengers 4, just gets Ant-Man out and now the Quantum Realm is done? Wouldn't you be super upset with
that? At the beginning of Avengers 4?
Right.
After the Captain Marvel movie?
Or at the end and the stinger of Captain Marvel? Like, we have to deal with the Quantum Realm for Avengers 4.
Well, it depends when the explanation is. I mean, is she going to pull out? You know, they'd have to do a lot of explaining for her to pull out Scott Lang who went in the quantum realm in 2018.
Yeah.
And she pulls him out in 1980 something. And maybe that's how the quantum realm works. Maybe it's a time shifting thing. They said time's not the same. So who knows? But you're right in that they have a lot of explaining to do.
And that would explain the Michelle Pfeiffer 30 years thing. Why she didn't go crazy. I just, you know, it'd be nice if they explain her superpowers, but
I think it's coming. I think it is. I think that's what Avengers, maybe it is Captain Marvel. I hadn't thought of that. That's interesting, but I think it's going to be Avengers 4. I think Captain Marvel is the big reveal at the end of Captain Marvel is going to be, oh, by the way, I know you can come back from this. Why don't you ever call me if shit goes wrong? Here's the information, blah, blah, blah.
And that's where everybody is.
The connection.
Fascinating. Fascinating, fascinating. I don't know. Again, I'm intrigued, you know, for a comic book popcorn movie to get us thinking and talking this much is fun. Getting us arguing as heavy as we did.
We are basically scientists now. I think we've done it.
Scientists are also scoffing at us.
What do you guys think? Do you have any theories about how this ties into Infinity War? Do you think, did we miss something? Is Ant-Man and the Wasp more intricate to the MCU storyline than just that one post-credits scene in some way? Let us know. Reach out to us, Mike, and Oscar on Facebook, Mike, and Oscar on Instagram, MM and Oscar on Twitter, Mike, and Oscar at gmail.com, Mike, and Oscar Reddit, Mike, and Oscar.com. We're everywhere. If you see podcasts, type in Mike, and Oscar. You'll see our smiling faces and leave us a review. We'd really appreciate it if you could do that. Type a couple nice words, hit 5 stars, give us a thumbs up, and we'll try to hit you back.
Hey, if you like our honest take on Marvel, we reviewed each one of those movies, Oscar lens on each one. Avengers Infinity War, Black Panther could contend this year. This is literally our 12th episode on a Marvel property. So go back. We're covering the MCU from beginning to end.
Yeah, guys, the reality sucks. Keep watching movies with us. Enjoy your weekend. Go see Ant-Man and the Wasp, but you know, go see it with the right expectations.
Have fun. Yeah, have fun. See ya.